Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, Jim, what am I doing? I'm writing like mad as usual. I'm delighted to say, first, greetings, everyone. I'm delighted to say that I've got some good news about the recent excellent Western spun-off of Yellowstone, 1883.
Okay.
We were all so sorry to see end. When I spoke to the series creator, Taylor Sheridan, about a week before they rolled camera, I asked how many seasons he could imagine the show going. And he said, in no uncertain terms, that there would only be one season. There might be further stories about other generations of the Dutton family, but 1883 would be a complete story. And when it ended, the story was so complete, and so many of the characters were dead, that even though Paramount Plus teased about further episodes, it seemed unlikely. Well, the news is, there will be a new series. 1883, The Bass Reeves Story.
Oh, okay. That's very smart.
Yeah, well, you know, Sheridan has been talking for years about doing a Bass Reeves show. You know, for folks out there who don't know, the first black deputy marshal who worked in the Indian Territory, and he had an unmatched record for outlaw captures.
Right.
Well, so it's going ahead under the 1883 banner, and I don't know how or if the Dutton characters will be worked into it, but we shall see. And incidentally, Sheridan has announced the Dutton follow-up to 1883, and it's 1932. Mm-hmm. And as you might guess, it's set during Prohibition and the Great Depression, and will star Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren.
Oh, oh wow.
Yeah, he's getting good people. Mm-hmm. I don't know when those shows will begin, but I am happy to announce that the INSP channel will begin airing season 2 of Wild West Chronicles on Thursday, July 28th. That's the docudrama series where Bat Masterson, who did indeed become a journalist, is a reporter writing articles about his cronies, and they stick pretty closely to the history. And speaking of articles, the current True West features my piece on Katie Haber, who was Sam Peckinpah's girl Friday and Saturday and Sunday on 8 movies in 7 years. And my newest piece for the INSP blog is about the friendship of John Wayne and Jim Arness. And I got to speak with Patrick Wayne and Bruce Boxleitner about that relationship. Here's something interesting that came up. In the movie The Alamo, Richard Boone played Sam Houston, but he was a last-minute replacement. Who did Wayne want for that role?
You got me.
James Arness. And it's a very interesting story about why he didn't do it and how it all worked out. Now, since we last talked, in addition to interviewing Patrick Wayne, I also interviewed actor Barry Corbin. So, you know, watch for those interviews coming up in True West. And you can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Well, thank you, Henry.
Henry, before you bail out, I got a quick question for you. Because anything indie is near and dear to my heart. What are you hearing about the indie-produced film? It's supposed to come out on a streaming service, and I don't know which one. It's called Terror on the Prairie. It has Nick Searcy and a couple of wrestling stars that decided to try their hand at a Western. Have you heard anything about that project? Is it going to be worth watching, or what do you know?
You know, all I know, like you at this point, is the title. I didn't even know who was in it. But let me see what I can find out, because it's better than making up an answer.
There you go.
Nebo Kirschbaum.
Okay, check into that.
He's the star. Nebo is the star. Nebo Kirschbaum is the star.
Ah, okay. I thought you said Leonard Nimoy, and I could see some problems.
No, Nebo Kirschbaum. Wesley Slakomanowicz is his co-star.
Okay.
How's that, Richard? Well, do we satisfy your hunger for names?
My goodness, yes.
Okay, thanks, Henry. Talk to you in July. You. Be good, my friend.
You too. Happy trails, guys.
Happy trails. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, well, without any further ado, before we get into our first break, we have a guest tonight that, for lack of a better word, he's a qualified trash man. No, he's a recycle king in Temecula, California. He and his brother own a company. And from what I can gather, he does recyclable plastics. Is that right, Paul?
Yeah, buddy.
There you go. He's an ex-rock musician. As those of you who will be able to see this show when it airs in the video format will be able to see that Paul indeed is an ex-rock musician. He has the locks to go with it. And it's Paul. Okay, wait a minute.
Bahu.
Okay, just like Yahoo, only Bahu.
That's right.
Okay, so Paul Bahu, welcome to the Writer's Block.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. You know, Mickey gives us 2 writers a month, and you're one of them.
Oh, yay! So,
yay!
Hooray for me.
I know,
yeah,
huh?
Hooray for you. Hooray for all of us.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know. And you've got a new book. Actually, your very first book out is entitled, let me see if I can get it right here, because I have a bad memories now. Sunset Distortion. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And we're going to talk about an aging rocker that gets kidnapped by some space guys, and it's quite the novel. Well, you want to give us a little bit about it before we get into our question period there, Paul?
Sure. So it's the novel's called Sunset Distortion, The Pyramid at the End of the World. You know, you got to give a second after the title to let the gravity settle in. So it's part one in a 5-book series, and it is about a middle-aged rocker named Laser, who plays in a heavy metal cover band on the Sunset Strip. And he's just kind of, you know, living his life, never really made it as a rock star, but just kind of got stuck in that kind of rut of a lifestyle. And one night he gets abducted by space aliens, and all bets are off. By around pages.
Yeah, everything goes to hell from
everything. It just spirals out, and so he gets kind of launched into this weird intergalactic race for this alien artifact. It's fun stuff. You'll love it.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting. I have to say that I had to go back and read several parts again, some of it just still confused me. But I suppose that's a mark of some good sci-fi. I don't know. I'm not the sci-fi aficionado. Mr. Polinelli is.
I'm here to help.
There you go.
Lay the questions on me.
I like Laser only in the fact that he's kind of like my generation and Lost.
Yes.
And he's right on the edge of being an alkie and a druggie, and he just hasn't quite figured out what the rest of his life is going to be like. Like a lot of us were in our 50s. A lot of us still are in our 50s. So it's like, it's not necessarily a dystopian novel, but it's also almost an allegory. And I almost want to say it's an allegory. There's a backstory there someplace. There's something that you're alluding to that isn't quite coming to the surface. I want to say it's politics or the failure of politics, possibly. Maybe you can help me out with that.
Are you referring to just the general kind of state of the galaxy and just how everything's privatized and the same companies that operate security are also the crime syndicates? And it's all, yeah. So that gets expounded upon in greater detail in book 2.
Okay.
So there was a lot. And I tried to focus this particular installment on just introducing everyone and really kind of Laser's journey that kicks this whole thing off.
Okay.
So there's, you know, I had a lot more exposition and I just cut it all out. I'm like, no, it needs to be Laser focused. And I can allude to just kind of the general, quasi dystopian nature of of the it's called the Galactic Union. The general idea is that the entire galaxy is just under one big bureaucratic banner. So there's no war. There's no everything is it's all it's like the EU. So you get a taste of just kind of how upside down it is. But all good science fiction is something of an allegory to our own times.
Well, sure. So sure. I mean, you kind of caught me off guard right in the first probably 10 pages of the book when you mentioned, well, one of the characters mentions a Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Space.
Yes.
The Smormons.
He gets abducted by the Smormons.
The Smormons.
The Smormons. So they are, without giving any, you know, you don't want to give anything like too much detail, no. Right? But the idea is yeah, there's, so humanity and Earth is kind of like this culture generator where we're like this lost, uncontacted tribe in the Amazon, right. But in the wider galaxy. So, but everyone's taken from us and the culture and everything. So it's getting like reappropriated in outer space, and it's like a copy of a copy of a copy. So kind of every aspect of our own culture is kind of taken to this bizarre extreme in every direction, be it religion or music or movies or what have you. And so the Smormons are just there's this race of aliens called the Klaxian. They're these little blue guys, and they came down to Earth, and they their first contact was with Mormon settlers in the 1800s, and they got converted. And then so they kind of took that and said, oh, this is what we're doing, and they just do it to like the 10,000th degree. And so everything is just over the top, beyond what you would expect on Earth. So it's
sure. Don't go away. We're going to have to take a real quick break, but we're going to be right back. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and we'll be back after this brief word from LA Talk Radio. Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. You know, for years I've been telling you about the benefits of LA Talk Radio and how easy it is to get your own show. Well, today is no different. Go to www.latalkradio.com. Find the button that says Become a Host and punch that button. Fill out the easy-to-find form, and Mr. Sam Hassan will be delighted to walk you through the rest of it. And before you know it, you'll be broadcasting live worldwide right here on LA Talk Radio. We're not just a podcast. We are live radio. So why not go there? Go to latalkradio.com, find the button that says Become a Host, and become your own host on your own live radio show right here at LA Talk Radio.
American, it would have been laser. You know, mm-hmm. getting caught up in what's going on completely above and beyond his capabilities at first. So I was getting that kind of a feel of it. And I was wondering, is that what you were going for? Or is it just one of those things where it kind of seems like it that way?
So I love Hitchhiker's Guide. It's one of my favorite books of all time. This series is wonderful. Just mm-hmm. the bizarreness. And the main thing, obviously, like the broad strokes are there, right? Just yeah. Joe Schmo Nobody gets abducted by aliens. And rather than like your typical kind of sci-fi canon of aliens are all like all-knowing or really hostile, instead it shows you just the mundane side of the universe and the aliens and, you know, all that kind of stuff and bureaucracies. And so that is definitely there. But I definitely tried to make it its own thing, and the plot is radically different, and what they do, and the main Laser is his own guy. I think anybody that's ever hung out in any kind of club scene or anything like that has met a guy like Laser, just the guy that just never let the dream die, never moved on, middle aged, still living like they're 21, and so I truly, you know, put some work, you know, tried to make that character kind of seem real, even though he is kind of outlandish.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Douglas Adams was going for, you know, goofy and bizarre and funny, and I kind of wondered, you know, what would have happened had he gone more serious and a little darker. And as I was reading your book, I'm like, okay, I'm kind of getting an idea, because this might have been how Hitchhikers would have played out if it had been written with that serious, darker tone in it. So it was a fun read, you know, from that aspect of finding out, okay, what would Hitchhikers be like if, you know, you kind of did that. It works. I mean, it works you know, the way you were talking about how you intended to write it. So you did a good job.
I appreciate that. Yeah, the Douglas Adams angle was definitely, I was greatly influenced by a lot of different kinds of science fiction, obviously, but that's one, that series always really kind of stuck with me. It's, you know, I really enjoy it. So, hey, thank you.
Well, now, if you were influenced by Harry Harrison, that would be a completely different thing.
Yeah, well, maybe my next book.
There you go. I think Bobby has some questions, though.
Bobby always has questions.
Yeah, we're going to bring Bobby in because it's her turn.
What's up, Bobby?
Hey, I kept thinking while I was reading this book, what is he thinking? I followed it pretty good up till about page 7, and then I was in outer space. I was just bumping along, and then there'd be some pages, and I'd be like, okay, I understand. And then you'd lose me, unfortunately. and the last maybe 4 chapters, Blood, Fang, and Demon, right up through the end, I kind of couldn't keep track of the people and what was happening to their bodies. And all of a sudden they had like metal legs and, you know, quite a romp. And I think I agree with Jim in, as I began to prepare for tonight, after having read it through, that's just how I am. Listeners know I read all the way through. I don't read reviews. I don't read anything but the book. And then I go back to get lists of people's names and all that kind of stuff. And as I did that, I thought, you know, this, I think I have to read this book all the way through a second time. but I guess my question, because unlike Richard, the only sci-fi I've read is over our 7 years on this show, and we've read a lot of sci-fi. I'm so curious how you came up with such a wide variety of different kinds of characters. We have, of course, Streak. Tell us about Streak. How did all of a sudden an octopus, like, tell us about Streak.
Okay. So Streak is Laser's sidekick. And yes, something of a way. They both get sold at this auction about a third of the way through the book, but it's not a slave auction. No, they're not savages in space. It's a meat auction. So they're refined. They're refined out in the wider galaxy. So,
And hungry.
Well, it's the lunch laws. You can eat it. And that, again, that kind of plays into your whole kind of quasi dystopian based off of current politics that is like might makes right. And if you're, you know, the powerful are like, yeah, we can literally eat you and it's legal. So there's some parallels there. So Streak is, yeah, he comes from a little planet called Dilapin, and he's just a terrestrial octopus creature that floats. He breaks down the science of it, but Laser never really cares. And he's kind of the polar opposite of Laser, where Laser is just this kind of like reed in the wind, kind of going with the flow, whatever happens, just always has this internal zen, even when he's, you know, in just this insane situation. And Streak is just anxious all the time. Everything makes him nervous. He second and triple guesses every decision he makes. And so he's kind of this polar, and he's very career oriented. And he has all these ideas. So they kind of complement each other. And so the story follows their friendship. And as it develops, and they're wildly different people, but they both need a friend. Yeah. They both need a friend. They need someone to kind of get them on a better track.
Yes.
And they're kind of each able to pull each other out of this kind of rut that they each kind of find themselves in.
There's an interesting relationship between, is it, how do we say her name? Q-I-T-I.
Kitty. Okay.
And Dex.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that it's really a spoiler alert, but I was kind of curious. Did you know from the onset what that relationship would be, or were these relationships between these various characters sort of revealed? Did they reveal themselves to you as you were writing?
I think the answer is a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. What you're alluding to, it gets. You know, put out there pretty quickly is Dex is Keedy's mother, and you kind of see these different relationships. There's multiple parental and child relationships, and you kind of see the difference between, you know, like this kind of coldness between Kitty and Dex. Meanwhile, the other, I guess, thing I don't really want to spoil, the other two characters that you're going to run into that are going to the ends of the earth to find each other. And correct. So, and so you have this huge dichotomy there of, you know, just like this totally strained and broken relationship on one hand, and another where they'll move heaven and earth to find each other. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of see the difference between the two. And then when, you know, there's some wacky business that happens later on, you can kind of see it all kind of come together.
Paul, you had great joy writing this, didn't you?
I love the process. I enjoy writing. I'm a creative guy. I like doing stuff, you know, it's a lot of fun. I can never sell a book in my life and I'll still do this. This just, it's an immense pleasure to be able to get all these different ideas in my brain and put them down there. And then actually people read them and they, you know, for the most part, it's positive.
Well, you know, our motto is never give up your day job when you're a writer. Never.
Yeah.
And if you're a writer and like you, you're going to sell your business, full-time writer, I have one thing to say to you. God bless you, my son.
Yeah.
That's a tough gig.
The goal of life is to do whatever I want, whenever I want it, right?
It's a tough gig. But if you, when you have the backing of a company like Tuscany Bay, it's not so bad. So I got the feeling reading this book that these characters were able to bounce back and forth between Galactica and Earth at whim, almost. Did I get that right? Because it seemed like they could do that.
Which characters?
Well, we saw at the end, Laser bounced back and then wound up going back out again from Earth back into space.
Okay. So that wasn't back on Earth. That was all.
Oh, that was okay. That was mine. Okay.
That opens for book two, right?
Yeah. So there's the right. Again, there's like the overarching story, and like that kind of final scene is setting up what's going to happen, kind of going forward into the next book. And
it took off together, and
you got to have some kind of you got to have something to move into the next story. And that entire final scene, that's all in Laser's head. That is, he's not back at Earth. He is, that is him finally kind of coming to terms with his own, you know, kind of stunted emotional growth and what's inside himself. And he's able to do that with, you know, the artifact in question.
Gotcha. Yeah. The thing he's trying to throw out the window.
The jewel.
Aperture parallax.
There you go.
In sci-fi circles, we call that the MacGuffin.
The MacGuffin. You got to get the MacGuffin. You got to have the thing.
Yep.
The thing, yeah. Let me talk about your fourth or second through fourth or fifth book. Do you have everything outlined and ready to go on those? Or are you going as you plan one, finish it and plan the other? How are you planning on doing this?
The second book is probably 80% complete.
Okay.
And books 3, 4, and 5 are all have the full treatment of what's going to happen in the story. So who's the bad guy? What's the dilemma? What are they trying to accomplish? Where the main story kind of deposits, you know, where it's going to set up to the next one. It's all sketched out already.
Right. Did you write the second one when you were writing the first one?
Yes. So I'd originally written this as a comic. Originally I wrote this in college as a short story for a creative writing class. And I got an A. Thank you very much. And then I tried to turn it into a comic book with a friend. We did the first issue, which was essentially the first chapter. And I thought it was great. I loved it. The artist was awesome. And we took it, we shopped it around. And as any creative person knows, you're never going to get a yes right away from anybody. No. He got five no's and was like, I quit. I am a terrible artist. And no one
five, that's all?
I was like, we just started. Like, this is literally day one. What are you doing? And so we quit. And then I got a different artist and we just didn't go anywhere with this. So I said, you know, I'm in a band. I got a job. I'm busy enough. I got a girlfriend, right? So it kind of just sat in the back burner. And then after my last band broke up, right around the time I got married, I tried to put a new band together and just couldn't make it happen. And I was like, I am so sick and tired of dealing with other people when I don't want to do something creative. It is a nightmare. I'm done. I quit. I'm going to write that book I've always been saying I'm going to do. So I took that story and I totally fleshed it out. And so I had already had the first half of book two sketched out from comic book days. So I already had, I knew exactly what I was writing into as I turned this, you know, 10,000-page short story into to a 85,000 page novel.
Okay. So War and Peace broken into five bits.
That's right. That's right.
Which it should have been to start with, but hey, what do I know? I'm not Russian.
Except, you know, with jokes and aliens and robots.
There you go. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Bobby.
Paul, I actually have a question. I had to write it out so I would ask it in a way that would make sense. How does science fiction's depiction of non-human or semi-human characters challenge or redefine what we mean by human?
That's a great question.
That's a great question. I love that. Thanks, Bobby. Well, I mean, I think you can even see just today the different kind of debate that goes around of like what makes humans so special, right? Apes use tools. You can teach an elephant to paint, you know? Animals have language. I mean, really, I think it was PETA. They're trying to make an elephant a person, trying to emancipate the elephant from the. You know what I'm talking about, Richard?
Yeah, so, yeah.
I think that debate is already there. And I always like to say, you know, one day robots are going to gain sentience, and we better know when to treat them right or we're toast. So, and just kind of like the overall, I think in science fiction, to your question, I think like that question kind of help us kind of engage with our own way we value life. So, I mean, not to be preachy here, I'm a vegetarian, and that's kind of the root of when I did that whole meat market scene was just like, hey, how does the cow feel? You know? So this idea that, sure, this is totally legal and you're you know, it for you culturally, you're on the right side of things, but this is absolutely horrifying for the other party in this situation. So it's this idea of like who's a human and what makes a human. I think that it's cool, and science fiction allows people to kind of have those conversations without having those conversations. You can kind of pose it in a different way and let people kind of draw from it what they will. Mm-hmm. So I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Don't go away. We're going to take another real quick break, and we're going to hear a real quick, brief word from Tuscany Bay Books and Mr. Richard Polinelli.
Hey there, writers. If you've just finished your latest novel, you got it to where it says the end and you're looking around and you have no clue what you're going to do next, don't be like Paul's first artist and throw your hands up in the air and quit. Come to Tuscany Bay Books. We can help you out. We can get that book formatted, edited, get a really good book cover for it. We even have a publicist who will go out and get your name out there so people know you're out there with a book to read. And if you're a reader, Tuscany Bay Books is where you need to come as well, because we have some amazing books out there. We have Westerns. We have mystery thrillers. We have some of the best sci-fi that you're going to find out there anywhere you look. So go to TuscanyBayBooks.com. If you're a writer, click on our submission form. Let us take a look at what you got. And if you're a reader, we got bookshelves full of books. You'll find something to read at TuscanyBayBooks.com.
Thank you, Richard. And it is now 6:33. Pacific time, and you can call and talk to Paul if you'd like. Number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And I will ask Paul to stay closer to his mic, if you wouldn't mind. You back off and we can't hear you. So
I'm wearing my AirPods. It's probably my hair is in the way. All the glorious hair just kind of getting in the way of the
Did you just say glorious hair?
No, I said glorious, comma, glorious air.
Oh,
okay. We would never correct a guest on this show, but we can't.
I'm telling you. Hey, you know what? You brought up the fact that you wrote this novel when you were in high school or
college,
I guess. Yeah. Five of our best-selling books right now are from an author who wrote them when he was 16.
That's awesome.
And that's Declan Finn. And it's the White Ops. Well, it's three. It's the White Ops series, and they are just taking the community, sci-fi community, and the book buying community by storm. They are just going like hotcakes. So Declan Finn, there it is. Where's one White Ops right there? Richard and I put a lot of time into these books, and they're fantastic reads. So if you get a chance, grab one, Paul. They're a fun. Declan's a tremendous writer. So pick it up. And we're going to look forward to your next book. What's the title of the next one going to be?
So part two in the series is called Sunset Distortion, Live from Valhalla.
And okay.
It goes into the kind of like the sausage making machine of the intergalactic culture,
sure.
You know, hierarchy and all the ridiculousness that ensues. And you know, Laser goes on a live music competition. It's a lot of fun, you know, lots of jokes and aliens and all that good stuff. But sure. my next book to release, I'm currently working on a collection of short stories in the horror and sci-fi genre. I'm a big fan of like short fiction and you know, I was really heavily influenced growing up watching things like The Outer Limits and Twilight Zone and just these kind of self-compacted little stories that don't require, you know, it's more of a concept and then they flesh out the concept. And I really love that. So that's going to be my next release. You know, I don't want to just do, you know, book one, book two, book three, book four, book five. I want to move it around a little bit, you know, do something between every Sunset Distortion book, just sure. So I'm cleansing my palate, coming back to it with maybe some fresher ideas, building on that while still doing something else that's maybe a little more accessible. So this is a little more towards the, you know, sci-fi horror genre, if you will. Some weird stories. Like I got one about obviously I own a recycling company, so I wrote one about a recycling robot sortation unit that becomes self-aware and tries to destroy all humanity. And but he can't because he's bolted into the concrete. So he has to figure out how to get out. It's great. I got a story about a sentient Christmas tree that tries to murder a bunch of pro-Trump podcaster guys. It's a podcast company, and then their Christmas tree tries to kill them, and you know, fun stuff.
Gotcha. When do you like to write?
When or what?
When?
Whenever I can, you know, I got a business and I got two kids under five, so I take it when I can get it. Sometimes I write on my phone while I'm holding my son and I'm putting him to sleep. When the kids are both to bed, I'll get on the laptop and I'll write until my brain doesn't work. Sometimes I'll just wake up in the middle of the night. That's when the best ideas come out, you know, when there's nothing else going on and just hyper-focused into the story. Right. Whenever I can.
Okay, Bobby.
What up, Bobby?
So what kind of bedtime stories do you share with your kids?
I hope not this one. No. My daughter really likes this one called The Book with No Pictures. And it's a really cute one where you kind of have to act out zany words. And she loves it, you know.
Yeah.
She's an animated little girl. And so she likes it when you put a little pizzazz into her bedtime story.
Sure.
Also, I think I've read The Lorax 1,000 times by now. So,
probably,
you know,
yeah.
Teach them about sustainability when they're young.
Do you make some up just for them?
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll just repurpose like Star Wars or something and I'll put her in like the main role and I'll just kind of wing it. Or, it's fun. I get to be creative with it, but nothing horrible, nothing scary. You know, I don't want the dad come back. There's a monster in my head.
This book is not a book to read right before you go to bed.
No,
you don't want to be paying your therapist for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Kids are expensive as they are.
Do you snack when you're writing? Do you have a favorite snack or beverage that you find, you know, helps keep you stimulate, you know, keep you going?
Yeah, marijuana.
Ah, okay. Ah, now I get it.
Yeah, it clicks together now, doesn't it?
That explains chapter 9. Yeah.
Okay. It answers all my
questions. Explains the entire book.
Yeah. I mean, come on, look at this face.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Such a face.
My mom worked very hard on it.
How much of laser is, or how much of you is in laser?
There you go. I was just going to ask that.
So when I wrote this book, I was in college. So I definitely wasn't laser. Laser was kind of an amalgamation of several people I knew just from in like the rock scene and like a was roughly based off of a family friend that I then kind of extrapolated out, made him a little more ridiculous, and then just took from all these other kind of just wacky characters I knew just in life, just going and playing these gigs with my band. And there would always be in every single city that dude who's like 50 years old wearing the leather jacket with the long hair, and he's just like picking up 20-year-olds, you know, like you just see this all the time in like every single city we'd go to. And I just like, someone needs to tell like the story of that guy. And so that's what I tried to do. And I, you know, I tried to be endearing and loving with him, even though, you know, the guy is kind of ridiculous in his own way.
Well, at least he sleeps in his van. I mean, you know, yeah. You got to hand that to him.
Got a cool van.
It's a very short commute to work.
Yeah.
There you go.
Doesn't want to lose those car keys. The van keys.
Bobby, I believe it's your turn to ask the question.
Okay. So this is the only set question that we have every show. And that is, do you get writer's block? If you do, what do you do to get around it? If you don't get it, what do you think about it?
Oh, writer's block is very real. To get around it, what I do is I write on my phone and I write on my computer. And when I'm writing on my phone, it's very broad strokes. It's just, you know, conceptual, or I just start the story and I just go until I can't keep track of what's happening anymore because it's just, I'm 10,000 words in and I'm on my phone. And then so I'll you know, dump it into my computer, and then that's where I flesh the story out and I start doing editing. So I usually have, you know, 3 or 4 stories I'm working on at any given time. And so depending on where my brain's at, if it's in a place where I just want to write, cool, I'm going to flesh out the main story I'm working on. If that creative part's not there, I'll work on editing, and I'll just go through and I'll edit and I'll use that part of my brain. And if neither that's working, then I'll just get conceptual. And I will around, you know, what I like to do is I like to assign kind of a soundtrack to everything I'm writing, whether it's be it a novel or a short story. And if I'm kind of stuck, I will listen to music in that vein of that story, and I'll just kind of try to like just jog some ideas up. And then that usually kind of does the trick. So every single thing I write, short, it could be a 3,000 word short story, or like I said, you know, something, you know, War and Peace or whatever. And it's going to have its soundtrack, and I can go back to that to kind of get some ideas. So So for this story, lots of classic heavy metal, you know, Dio, Black Sabbath, Metallica, you know, like the dad metal, you know, Iron Maiden, obviously. I'm wearing my Iron Maiden shirt.
Right, Iron Maiden.
But then, you know, some Miley Cyrus and Phil Collins, and I try to go all over the place with it just because the story is all over the place, and I want, like, different characters kind of have their own tastes and their own styles, and I want that kind of reflected across. It's not just one heavy metal palette across the story. Everyone's kind of bringing, like, Streak, our floating octopus friend, is really heavily into prog rock. And so, you know, when I'm writing his stuff or his dialogue or kind of working on scenes that heavily involve him, that's what I'll throw on some Yes. I'll throw on some, you know, some Phil Collins stuff that he likes. And so there's a lot of music referenced in the story, this one in particular.
Your characters have theme songs.
Yes, everyone has their own. I actually have a playlist on my Spotify. I never made it public. It's just kind of something I will go to whenever I want to jog some ideas out.
Gotcha. You know what? We're going to do one real quick break, and then we'll be back. This is for Creative Edge. And if you've written a book and you don't quite know how to market your book, well, why not get a hold of the folks at Creative Edge Publicity? See, they're not going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book. What they are going to sell is your brand. And they're going to do that through all the contacts they've made in TV and radio and podcasts and even movies, hopefully. So that's Mickey Mickelson at Creative Edge Publicity. You, if you've written a book and you want to get it marketed and you want to market your brand and yourself as an author, you want to go to Creative Edge. You can find them at creative-publicity.services.
There you go.
Creative-publicity.services or hyphen services or creative Edge Mickey Mickelson at Creative Edge. So you may want to go to them and find out. Mickey's a great guy. He's Paul's publicist. He's a house publicist for Tuscany Bay. And he's a great guy to work with and just a wonderful human being. So give him a shot, Creative Edge Services. Okay. Yeah.
Let me give Mickey a quick little shout out myself.
So sure.
I knew the world. I'm a businessman, but I also know that I knew the world of music and the kind of the way music worked in terms of putting your band out there and getting notice and getting on tours and stuff like that. And then I came in, I wrote this book, and I was like, what am I doing? And a dear friend of mine named Jen Lieberman, she wrote a book called Year of the What. Yep. Super talented. She used to come see my band all the time, go way back.
We She's know like, her.
Yeah, I was like, Jen, you're successful. You're a writer. I have no idea what I'm doing. Point me in the right direction. She's like, I got the guy to introduce you to. And I've been working with Mickey for about a year now, and I've learned a tremendous amount from him, just trying to pivot into writing. And I think that if writing is something you want to really pursue and go into, I definitely think that he's someone that can help be your Sherpa up the mountain.
Oh, absolutely. And incidentally, Jen Lieberman is a very good friend of this show's, and she's actually been on the show, and she's been a featured co-host on the show, I guess.
Oh, she's great.
Oh, Jen is like a terrific lady. It's a lot of fun to be around.
Yeah, she filled in for me for 1 week when I was out and about in the plains of Texas somewhere.
You were someplace where you shouldn't have been.
Yeah,
doing things you shouldn't have been doing.
Being chased by those guys.
Yeah. There you go.
Hauling bales of marijuana across the Rio Grande into Valverde, Texas. Okay, here you go.
I'll tell you how to get past that checkpoint.
There you go. Okay, Paul, this is a question that we recently started asking our writers. When you're writing your book, what do you expect your readers to get from it?
I don't think that's up to me. I think that as a creator, whether it's music or it's books or it's a painting or whatever, your art is something that's deeply personal to you. And you put a lot of your, hopefully you put your time and passion and creativity into it. But once someone consumes that art in whatever format it's in, it's theirs now. And they're going to plug in the gaps and they're going to, kind of put the imprint of their own life and what they're going through on top of it and superimpose those feelings and emotions and that part of their life on top of that. And it doesn't really matter at that point what I'm trying to say. It's really my hope is that I can make it specific enough yet, vague enough. There's like this kind of magic middle there where you can say what you want to say, but someone else can kind of take that and plug it into some deeper meaning in their life. And I think that that's like one of the coolest things about art is that it's what you're doing and what someone's receiving can be radically different things. And that's okay. So for me, I try to, you have your things that are heavy handed and that you kind of beat over the head. And then you have your stuff that's more subtle and people don't have to get all of the layers. It's fine. Some of that stuff that's a little subtle, maybe it's just there that you appreciate it, ties it together for you that someone else might not catch that, but they're catching something else. And if it resonated with them, I think that's all that matters.
Okay. Do you think that writers, and I'm going to be general now, do you think writers, when they get into deep series, that they start losing their focus on writing for their enjoyment and start writing for the public?
I think that depends on how popular you are. But it's, I don't know. I'm only still working on book two. I don't know if I can give you that answer yet.
Okay. Because we've had writers on here that have written huge series.
Yeah.
I mean, one writer was 30, John And
Sanford?
Sanford, there's 32 yeah. books. Yeah. 32 playbooks.
It was at that time. Wow. It was 32.
Yeah.
And he does like one a year or
yeah, he's, or I mean, he's prolific. But he hasn't lost his touch. He hasn't lost his feel for the characters.
And I think the main thing is that you want to do it and you enjoy it and you enjoy the,
exactly.
love the process. Loving the process, I think, is key to creating something that works. If you, right. if it's a slog all the way through, then it's going to be a slog for the person on the receiving end of it and consuming it. Sure. You know, you have to, you know, you should create it with, you know, it doesn't have to be joy. You can be like angry or you can have some kind of emotion, but something needs to be behind it. It can't yeah. just be like, ugh, I guess I have a deadline. I'm going to just crap this thing out. I mean, you can tell when someone yeah. put the effort into it and when someone just kind of went through the motions.
Yeah. Go ahead. Do you have something, Richard?
No, I was just agreeing with him. I mean, I've read books where you can tell the author was really cooking with it, and you know, read a book here and there where you're like, what? He was just trying to get a paycheck. I mean, that's
yeah.
He was, you know, it was just you don't think it should show that way, but it does come through to the reader. The amount of effort and time and care and love that you put into the work will translate onto that page, whether you realize it or not.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, I think that a lot of writers get started on a book and they think it's going to be a one-off. And like I did with The Hunter, I started writing the second book before the first book was even halfway through. It just was a continuation of the story. And I think that worked for me, but I don't think it's always going to work for other writers. And I'm just kind of curious because we on this show have read books that, well, maybe should never have been written.
Hopefully I'm not on that list.
I mean, no. Yours is not one. Yeah, but, you know, yours, you have to understand sci-fi. And yours, you have to understand, you know, a universe that you have created. And I'm sure in your second, third, and fourth, and fifth books, the understanding will be even more than this first book was. Excuse me. We're out of time. We're going to have to go. But I want to thank you for giving us your time there in good old town Temecula, California. I love Temecula. I used to drive before a bit back and forth between Sunnymead, which is now Moreno Valley, and San Diego. And we used to go through Temecula when it was nothing but an old cowboy town.
And, it's boomed.
Yeah, it's huge now. And what was the leather company that used to be there? Holsters. There used to be a holster manufacturer used to be there.
I know the answer to that, but it's left me.
Yeah, me too. I you know, it's what happens when you get old. Shit just goes out your head. Anyway, thanks, Paul. If you want to hang out after the show, we always hang out for a couple of minutes and just BS a little bit. Next week is Lori Stevens, and she's going to be talking about her new book, and I have forgotten what it is, but Jerry told me, and that's how quickly I forget things. But it's Lori Stevens will be with us next week. And for, of course, myself and Bobby Jean Bell, Jim Bell, Richard Polinelli, Mr. Sam Hassan, and LA Talk Radio, and, of course, the bookie, without whom this show could not be possible. We are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.